Yes, hi everyone. Great to be back with you, David Wiener, for another episode of the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast. And what a great weekend to review. MacArthur atop of the table. We had a seven-goal thriller, and Bruno Fornaroli is doing Bruno Fornaroli things.
Farrell, surely. Content, Alukwal, and a cherry on top of the cake for the Central Coast Mariners.
Lifting the cross. Leckie! Melbourne City take the lead, and it is their Socceroo star.
And Irish eyes are smiling in front of the Red Army. Brisbane lead, 2-0.
Holman shoots and Holman scores. First blood to the older brother.
Danger, confusion, and a second goal for Newcastle. And those two Newcastle fans can barely believe what they're seeing.
Fornaroli's done wonderfully well. What a finish. Into the top corner. And Bruno Fornaroli just cannot stop scoring.
How good's that? Joined today by David Davidovic and Nick DiBarno to walk through it all. A weekend that sees us with MacArthur at top of the table. Seven games unbeaten with Brisbane Roar a point behind them. Wellington Phoenix knocked off by Newcastle Jets, so they're sitting third. Melbourne Victory fourth, Western Sydney Wanderers fifth and sixth, with Adelaide rounding out the table. What was your highlight of the weekend, Davo? Great to see you.
Great to see you and speak with you again. Look, hard to go past Bruno Fornaroli. It's the obvious one, but there's so much to like about Bruno Fornaroli at the moment. When he's in form, he's just great to watch. He scores unbelievable goals. He's got this aggression about him that you don't see in too many players. And when he's on and he's confident, even the touch, I think, for his second goal, when I think it was De Silva pinged the ball into his feet from 30, 40 yards, and the way he's just put it down and turned and knew exactly where the ball was going to be, still had a fair bit to do. But look, he's just great to watch. And for any young up-and-coming Australian footballers, male or female, watch Bruno Fornaroli, particularly if you want to be an attacker or a striker. Have a look at his determination, the way he uses his body, the way he wriggles past players, past opponents. He is absolutely on and, yeah, an absolute joy to watch.
And for any mid to late 30 hackers out there, an inspiration to get back onto the park and think that we can still rediscover our glory days. What about you, Nick? You don't have to worry about the mid to late 30 worries, but what did you enjoy over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been easy just for me to say, yeah, I agree with exactly what Dave was saying about Bruno Fornaroli, but I guess we do need to give some love to everyone else as well. But you did mention it. I mean, MacArthur's top of the league, seven games unbeaten. I mean, no one probably really saw this coming. Bottom of the table last season, a bit of doubt. You know, they went out in the round of 32 of the Australia Cup to an NPL South Australia team in Campbelltown City. A little bit of worry there, but they've done really well to be able to get these results early in the season. And right now, you know, look, a lot can be made of Sydney going down to 10 players, but Sydney FC created a bucket load of chances. They had to weather a really, really strong storm from the Sky Blues. They did well to hit them on the break, take their chances. And look, you know, they're flying high at the moment and they're looking like a team that really could cause some damage as this season progresses. And the other thing on top of that is they've been battling, you know, this really difficult fixture run of games in Asia. They've had to play four, well, by the time their game with Dynamic Herbs over on Thursday, it'd be four out of six games technically played away in this group stage rather than playing the 3-3 usual balance. So they've had to weather travel, a changing squad, you know, some really tough games as well in the early part of this season. But right now, they're top of the table and flying high.
Absolutely, and massive props to Mile Stojovski, who's come in and absolutely turned that team around and is doing a brilliant job in charge. One of my highlights of the weekend was a bit more of a sentimental one with the brothers, Jake and Corey Holman, taking on each other in that game on Saturday night. I'm just going to read out what Jake said after we said, it was special. We've had so many hours at the local oval together, training together, as well as my younger sister, Shay, who plays for Sydney as well, of course. And there have been numerous tears over those hours of playing together. I think that sounds like those were pretty tough battles by the sounds of it. You're thinking sometimes, that's my brother. Is this a little kick around or a professional match? I think it's super special, especially for my parents. The amount of sacrifice they put in for us to even have the chance to play for professional football, no words can do it justice. How good is that, Dave? That's as a parent, that's your dream to hear your kid say something like that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Would have been even better for them if they were all still at Sydney FC. But no, look, the parents, the folks would have been delighted. And a shout out to them because obviously, you know, they've done something very, very well in terms of their upbringing, certainly from a football point of view. I'm not sure what the score marks are or have been, but look, from an Australian football viewpoint, we've got three extremely talented players and really looking forward to seeing Jake evolve because he's a little bit different. He's different to you don't see that type of midfielder all that much. He's a guy who can, you know, get the ball. He's got the confidence. He can pin his ears back and take people on. And that finish, you know, on the weekend was absolutely outstanding. Really quick thinking and quick feet.
And he's in a really interesting midfield as well that looks like they're combining and balanced really, really beautifully. We'll touch on that in a moment. Yeah, Jake 22, Corey 20, Shea 18. That is a production line for Australian football. Well done to the Holman family. Right, gents, we're going to mix it up a little bit this week. We're going to begin at the end of 7-goal thriller to round out your Sunday afternoon.
Delivers, it's a good ball in. Oh, it's four from Fonaroli. And what a way to bring up number 100.
Yeah, how good was this game? Melbourne victory out of the blocks. 4 goals, Bruno Fonaroli. It got a bit interesting at the end. Marcus Antonsson and Valentino Yule making it a really, really exciting finish at the death. But the job was done through Bruno Fonaroli scoring a double hat trick or 4 goals of the highest order of all sorts of shapes and sizes. We'll speak about Bruno specifically in a moment, but Nick, your assessment of this game.
Yeah, a really fascinating game. I mean, going into this contest, you know, the Wanderers hadn't conceded a goal at home, and for victory to come out and, you know, hit them early, it is such a big thing. You know, last week the Wanderers conceded early against Brisbane, and I wonder if maybe that was a little bit of a point of conversation this week in Tony Popovich's team talk to come out of the blocks early and try and hit him. And they did. I mean, you know, Zinedine Mikash forcing a really good save from Lawrence Thomas, Fonaroli in the right place at the right time. And from there, they really built because there was a patch there probably in that first half too where the Wanderers could have probably pulled one back, but victory did so well defensively to weather that storm and then hit him on the break. It was a beautiful finish from Fonaroli for number two. I mean, Dave, you spoke about it earlier, you know, that he just that sort of composure. He waited a second to see if Tate Russell was going to commit. Would he pass the ball across to Volupele? But he opened up that extra bit of space for himself, and what a fantastic finish it was. But to Western Sydney's credit, they did come out in the second half and really put victory under the pressure, even though the scoreline did balloon out to 4-1 at one point. Some of the changes were actually quite positive and they created a lot of good goal-scoring opportunities. Western Sydney, I think with, you know, Valentino Yule coming on, I think they've got a real talent there to build off. He had some lovely connections with Marcus Antonsson in that last little bit to create a bit of a grandstand finish. But look, to victory's credit, they held on a week early against the Mariners. They were in a similar spot, up 2-1 in the second half, up against enormous pressure, and they folded and they drew 2-2. But this time around, doing enough to come away with the win. And of course, you know, we can make a lot about Bruno's performance, but the support act as well was brilliant yesterday. You know, Zinedine Mikash, another really solid performance. Daniel Arzani was a great free kick that he put into the box for Bruno's fourth. Good to see him start to, you know, get a little bit of reward for effort. I think he's really starting to build into his own. He got benched against the Mariners, but back in the starting lineup, and I thought a really positive performance yesterday. So overall, a big result for victory. I mean, 4 draws in a row. They haven't lost yet, but getting that all-important win, their first since round two, is massive heading into a huge stretch of games, guys. I mean, 3 blockbusters at home in a row, Sydney FC, Melbourne City, Adelaide United to round out the calendar year. It's going to get the fans on side as well. I'm sure each of those 3 games are going to be absolutely pumping. So what better way to do it than return home with 3 points against one of the top sides in the league so far?
It looked good for victory, Dave. We've been waiting for them to click in an attacking sense. And there was a moment probably before Wanderers pegged it back and got that exciting finish where you actually thought victory could have actually done some even further damage. It looked really good.
Yeah, it did. On the Wanderers for a moment, and, you know, they got obliterated early on and, you know, obviously they came back and then I had a chance to nick a point. But I think there's some really good signs there for the Wanderers, and you got to, you know, remember that Brandon Borello, you know, has been ruled out. They were missing him. They'll get him back early in the new year, you expect, or before finals anyway. But Yule is a really shrewd signing for them. That's a top signing from Marco Rudin, who obviously worked with him back at Western United. So they've just, you know, filling out that squad with a bit of depth. So I think think there's enough positives from Roots to take away from that game, as much as he would have been absolutely gutted, you know, to have lost and certainly to lose in that manner. I get the sense that last week going into the game when he gave Bruno a bit of a, you know, a massive compliment, he might have thought, you know, that'll like maybe psych him out, you know, like Bruno will maybe go easy on him because you know, he's said some kind words about him, and it was 1, 2, 3, 4, bang. But look, that was, you know, all about victory, and to get the 3 points away against a fellow, you know, finals contender, and I think they'll both of those teams will have ambitions of finishing inside the top two. So that was really important for victory. They climb up above the Wanderers for Tony Popovich against his old side. But just looking at the victory team, I mean, that's, you know, arguably their strongest 11. They've been mixing and matching a little bit throughout the season. Perhaps, you know, the only disclaimer, Jason Guerrier maybe slots into that right back position instead of Connor Chapman. He, of course, came on late in the game, but that is a really strong looking first 11 for victory. And we've spoken about their depth again, a very, very strong bench. And that depth's going to be important potentially in January when the Asian Cup's on and, you know, they potentially lose one or two players.
You mentioned Marco Rudan's praise of Bruno Funaroli, who becomes the third player in A-League men history to go on and bring up triple figures in terms of goals. Let's have a listen to what he said after the game, referencing what he said midweek.
I told you so. Before this, in preparation for this game, you know, I was, you know, it's he's a good player, and we didn't do enough to stop him. You know, he's hungry, he's motivated this year more than I've seen him in a number of years, and we couldn't deal with him today. You know, he deserves what he gets because he's a fighter, he's a warrior. You know, he never gives up. Right at the end there, he's pressing, you know, the start, first line for his team, you know, and they're lucky to have him.
Josh, I love the top five goal scorers that he sits amongst, with Jamie McLaren, Bessart Berisha, the two ahead of him, Archie Thompson, Shane Smilts. That just rolls off the tongue as A-League's iconic royalty, that does. And Bruno Funaroli absolutely deserves to be amongst it. Dave, what Tony Popovich actually referenced as well in terms of what he's added to the game with goals inside the box. They often give a compliment to strikers that you're a scorer of great goals but not a great goal scorer. Well, that snapshot of Bruno Funaroli on the weekend showed he is very much both.
Yeah, well, I've seen a lot of Bruno Fornaroli's goals. I mean, he spent, you know, a lot of years at Melbourne City. I saw his first goal. I think it was a penalty in an Australia Cup game against Wellington Phoenix on a rainy Tuesday night at Amy Park. He broke the duck there. But some of the goals we've seen him score, absolutely sublime. You know, he's taken players on from almost the halfway line. There's been Rabonas. There've been all sorts of goals. So I don't think there's any question about, you know, the quality of goals that he scores. But, I mean, you referenced the, you know, all-time great, you know, A-League scorers. Let's not forget he's in, you know, rarefied company in terms of all-time Australian goal scorers as well. You know, he's equal with Shane Smeltz on 100, but, you know, he's, by the end of the season, he'll probably be in the top 15 scorers all-time, inclusive of, you know, the NSL list. And you've got guys like Andy Harper, Frank Farina, Warren Spink, Ante Milicic, Gary Cole, John Markovsky, who are just over that 100 mark, who, you know, assuming he goes on and there's no issues with injuries or anything like that, he'll probably overtake them. So I think it gives you a really good, you know, snapshot of, you know, the contribution he's made to Australia. And, of course, one of those, you know, who's been naturalised and will hopefully score some goals for the Socceroos as well.
Well, Nick, I'll come to you in a moment on this. I'll just give you, Dave, a chance to double down on your discussion last week with Tom Smithies and James Dodd. 4 goals with the Socceroos Asian Cup selection coming up very closely. Has it gone beyond he must be seriously considered to, you almost can't not take him?
Yeah, if you're looking at the strongest possible team right now, it's very difficult not to take Bruno Fornaroli to the Asian Cup. I think you could expand into, you know, kind of philosophical discussions about, you know, should we be taking, you know, Bruno as a naturalised player at the age of 36? You know, and then I do recall there was a fair bit of criticism around him being, you know, selected for that Socceroos squad. I think it was in that March window, of last year or thereabouts. But I've absolutely
lost with
the years. But
that's 2022, you know, if you can think that far back.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like about 4 or 5 years ago, to be honest. I mean, the Socceroos were under siege. Graham Arnold was under siege. A lot's changed since then. You know, so it's kind of like, all right, is there a young Australian talent, you know, 19, 20, early 20s, mid-20s, who's banging away goals, who's almost on par with Bruno Fornaroli? When you look at it now, probably not. I mean, you've got someone like Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, who's got 6 goals for Newcastle Jets, but you know, in terms of his whole body of work, I'm not sure he's a player like him comes into the Socceroos calculations. So, you know, I've mentioned Adam Taggart in previous weeks. He's, you know, scored again at the weekend, who's, you know, another striking option. But to be honest, at the moment, it's very, very, I'd be staggered if Bruno Fornaroli wasn't in the Asian Cup squad in January.
The other thing to take into consideration is playing in this league is not going to be a factor either way in Graham Arnold's selection. Jason Cummings' run of form got him into the World Cup squad last season from Central Coast Mariners. So if it's a pragmatic selection based on the best squad available, and I think the other twist in it in terms of would you take, we know Arnie's taken, you know, Garang Kuol to the World Cup. He's happy to put a younger player in the mix. But once you do, you know, Cummings is probably out of the equation, you'd think. Borrello's injury does change things as well. So the door does open, Nick, I suppose, to Bruno coming in and it not being, you know, well, this is a short-term play. We're not considering the future. Just the sheer numbers works out that everything might be aligned for him to be going.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, looking at the last Socceroos squad that played against Bangladesh and Palestine, they had 7 attackers and obviously Borrello going to miss, and you'd think that that spot might be taken by someone by Matthew Leckie if you're reading the tea leaves and the fact now that he's playing and he's sort of been someone that has been relied upon for such a long time. You'd think that Bruno Fornaroli and Cassini Yenge are kind of battling it out for that last spot if you're considering that Mitchell Duke and Jerry McLaren have basically been shoo-ins for the majority of squads when they've been fit. It probably is going to come down to one of them, but on current form, you can't not take him. Like, it would actually be more of a shock for him not to go because, you know, 11 goals in 7 games isn't anything to sneeze at. I think that he's scored, I think he's only one of two players in competition history to ever score 4 goals in a single game. Like, him and Shane Smelt's the only player to do it twice, which is incredible. And I'm pretty sure no one's done it twice in the same season, let alone the space of 7 games. It's been an incredible run for him. And the sort of, when you're looking at it, I mean, yes, there'll be conversations about, you know, should we be taking as you said, Dave, a 36-year-old who's on the, you know, at the tail end of his career. But if you're going to go and win the Asian Cup, you need to pick the players who are in the best form. And that should be the goal for the Socceroos, is to win the Asian Cup, not go there looking and treating it as sort of a tournament going forward to try and, you know, set yourself up for 2026. You've got a whole cycle that comes after that, a whole qualification phase, which comes after that. So, you know, when you look at as well the kind of teams that Australia are going to play in comparison to the World Cup, where, you know, at the World Cup, the Socceroos could sit back and play on the break and play guys that sort of suit where there's going to be more space. You know, Mitchell Duke, a much quicker player, great sort of hold-up player. McLaren, a great poacher. In games where you need players to unlock defences, especially set defences, Bruno Fornaroli's hold-up play, his ability to drag defenders, like, better probably than any other striker that we've seen here in the A-Leagues. I think that that's, you know, he does something so different to what we've seen from Thompson and McLaren and Berisha. He's just a vacuum for space. He's going to create so many other opportunities for others. And in those games we've seen in the past, in qualification phases, you think back to the last Asian Cup where the Socceroos struggled against set defenses. This is the kind of player you need for those sort of games. Whether he's coming off the bench for half an hour, whether he's starting some of those games, I think you got to do it. I think it's a throw at the stumps that you kind of have to do right now. Yes, I love what Cassini Yenge brings. Yes, I love what Jason Cummings brings and all these players. But on current form, Fornaroli has to be there. So I'd be shocked. I'd be absolutely shocked if he's in that 23-man squad.
And it's a really good point, Nick, the comparison between Asian Cup and World Cup and the fact that the Socceroos will have more of the ball, more possession, more opportunities, more on the front foot. Someone like Yenge can play in a wider position, so I don't see a reason why you couldn't have a Yenge as well as Fornaroli in the squad. But when you look at it, it would give Arnie the opportunity to play a front two, and I think Bruno would be – really comfortable playing in a front two with any of those aforementioned players, you know, McLaren, Duke, Yenge, and because of his versatility and his skill, you know, he can come deep, he can pick up the ball, he can hold it up, or he can, you know, play more sort of, you know, off the shoulder. But he's, yeah, I think for all those reasons that you mentioned, it's a pretty compelling argument for Bruno Fornaroli to play for the Socceroos at the Asian Cup.
Case closed this week. We'll see what next week brings. Earlier in the afternoon, it was another really entertaining game, Adelaide against Brisbane, where Ross Aloisi's Roar have gone to Adelaide and picked up the points. Jez Lofthouse and JSJ's second half goals, the difference.
And a big chance for Jez Lofthouse. It took a touch, I think, on the way through. They thought they had the opening goal in the first half. Now they do for sure.
Yeah, Dave, Brisbane, they impressed us early doors. They've ridden a few challenges. They're up in second place. Ross heads to a date with his in the Aloisi derby with John, very much in the heavyweight position based on form this season. Brisbane Roar continue to make you feel good when you watch their games, Dave.
They do. I mean, they're absolutely flying at the moment. I'm not sure what it was about the weekend, but they won that pretty convincingly, pretty comfortably. I mean, Roscoe, you know, has some pretty intimate knowledge of his old mob, I guess, doesn't he, Adelaide United? He knows Cooper Stadium very well. He's played there many a times. But, you know, that was a really, really solid performance from Brisbane. He was very happy with that. Very interesting to see Adelaide United. They started off like a house on fire, but, you know, seemed to have dropped away a little bit. I think you will continue to get that inconsistency. But, you know, to be honest, that was, you know, all about Brisbane Roar. A lot of positives to take out of it. They were missing Berengay and I think Corey Brown as well, who's been playing, you know, at left back, been starting the last few games. So some quality out of the side. But, yeah, didn't seem to make a difference. And, you know, even had that goal early on from Gamulka chalked off for offside. It was very narrow. But, yeah, super convincing. They go up to second spot, Brisbane Roar. And I'll tell you what, you'd be a brave person betting against them playing in the finals this season.
What did you make of the performance?
Very impressed because, as you mentioned, Dave, the absentees they had coming into the game, including Henry Hoare as well, that Ross Aloisi revealed post-game he's going to need knee surgery, which is another huge blow for them. But losing Scott Neville and Anthony Burke-Gilroy in the first half in a matter of minutes, so their defense was right down to, you know, the bare bones. You know, Kai Truan came on along with Lewis Zabala and did a good job at sort of stifling the Adelaide attack. But this team just plays with so much grit. I mean, it is such an easy thing to say. It comes down to attitude and everything like that. But teams could easily fold when such key players are missing. And, you know, when you look at the experience of, you mentioned Berengay and Corey Brown and also Scott Neville, that is, you know, that's a lot of games missing. Jay O'Shea really stepped up, playing a little bit more further up. So I think the silver lining now that Berengay and Hoare are missing is that O'Shea can now go back to playing as a number 10, where he thrives playing closer to goal. I think early doors this season, he's had to play almost a little bit more of a sacrificial role and play a little bit deeper to allow for Berengay and Hoare to really thrive further up. But now that, you know, sort of these injuries has necessitated it, he's been able to push forward and really cause all sorts of problems. And he even said post-game, he feels the fittest he's been ever since he's come to Brisbane, which is only good news for Roar fans. So really impressed by Brisbane. Adelaide, I mean, some of the issues, I guess, some of the worries we had before round one starting to come to the surface, just some really lapsed defending. They could have easily lost this game 3 or 4 nil if it wasn't for Joe Gauci. Yes, they had chances in the first half, but they just completely fell away in the second half. Didn't create much. A little bit concerning there. A quiet day for Nestoria and Kunda. Moussa Touré goes off the ground with a leg injury. So a tough game for them, and the Wanderers on Friday night is not going to be any easier. So really fascinated to see how they bounce back from this.
Yeah, that 15-minute blitz in particular just after the start of the second half could have been anything if Joe Gauci wasn't in great form. And it gets to 4 wins, 2 draws for the season for Ross Aloisi. And to summarise what you both mentioned, Scott Neville and Anthony Burke-Gilroy in the first half, joining Henry Hoare, Florian Berengay and Corey Brown in getting injured. You mentioned Aaron Kunda, Dave. I mean, this is going to be an evolving narrative until he leaves to go to Bayern Munich. And some very interesting commentary. Jump on aleagues.com.au to have a look at what some really important names in Australian football, Luke Wilshere, Brigitte, Roy O'Donovan had to say about their stories, body language as he got substituted. And I caveat this, Dave, by going, he is 17. This is the journey. And from my view, this is great to see this play out for him in Australia before he goes to the pressure cooker of the Bundesliga. Wherever that journey takes him with Bayern Munich, but he's got great experienced heads in a great environment, Adelaide United, to walk him through this journey that he is going through, the likes of Milligan, Viet, Gilekovic, all there at Adelaide, Dave. It's a good environment because Nestori's got a lot to develop.
Yeah, that's right. Look, first and foremost, I hope the kid's okay. He obviously wears his heart on his sleeve. There's a massive responsibility on him to, you know, to represent his family. They're a family of African refugees. You know, there was a fantastic story, A-League's all-access story centering on Yeran Kunda, which went into the, you know, the family history. So you feel that he does carry the burden of, you know, his entire family on his shoulders. And that's only intensified off the back of his $1.75 million move to Bayern Munich. He'll be going at the end of the season, and the word is that he'll be training with Bayern Munich's first team. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. Every game with Adelaide and with Yeran Kunda now is box office. There's always, you know, something's going to happen. It could be a moment of magic. There could be, you know, a moment of madness, and we saw that, you know, away to Melbourne Victory, and he had 15,000 Victory fans, you know, jeering him off the back of his involvement, let's say, with Roderick Miranda's, you know, second yellow card that saw him off. And, you know, in the end, he lost his cool in stoppage time, and you saw Tony Popovic getting around him. And again, emotional scenes at the weekend where he's on the bench, and for those who haven't seen it, it's worth catching the clip. He's got his, you know, his face under his shirt, and, you know, he was in tears. He really took it to heart getting subbed off, and we're not sure what words may have been exchanged or may not have been exchanged, but, you know, he clearly wanted to stay on. He wanted to, you know, improve. He wanted to help his team back into the game, and wasn't given that opportunity. So every Adelaide United game is going to be box office for the rest of the season, and it's going to be so important for his development ahead of him, you know, going to Bayern Munich and, you know, potentially playing for the Socceroos before then and doing a bunch of other things. But look, he's an immense talent. He's in great hands in Adelaide. I think, you know, the team there, you mentioned those names, some of the great names in Australian football and certainly at A-Leagues. They've got a really good understanding of how to manage Yeran Kunda and what they need to do. And I'll give them credit because, you know, I think they've given him a lot more minutes than what a lot of other coaches would have. And they've obviously exposed him to some testing and intriguing environments, and it's all part of his development.
Outstanding discussion on that on aleagues.com.au if you want to dig into it a little bit deeper and have a look at the incident. As I said, Roy Donovan, Luke Wilkshire and Brigitte. The interesting part of it, you mentioned the Socceroos, Dave. I think Luke Wilkshire, who's the most capped Socceroo living in Australia at the moment, mentioned you can probably see now why the hype about him maybe getting an early cap is premature. Let the kid go through the journey and work through that process. And I thought there was some very interesting discussion as well about the pressure he's feeling in that, despite his body language we saw on camera, he was still the last person to leave the field afterwards, making sure he signed every single autograph in the stadium. And that's the responsibility he's harbouring and feeling. And as a 17-year-old, that can be a lot to shoulder, and why he wears his heart on his sleeve in a literal sense. So really good win for Brisbane Roar. I've made no secret on this show how much I enjoy watching Jay O'Shea play, and seeing him with the likes of Milan Uznic and Lofthouse as well. They're only going to go from strength to strength, Brisbane Roar, and credit to them on and off the field. They are on the way up, which is fantastic to see.
Across to Germain, clever little touch, and that's it, surely. Valère Germain runs to the French supporters in the crowd.
Saturday night's main game, we alluded to it earlier, MacArthur triumphing at the Sydney Football Stadium. I've just gone back 15 years. At Allianz Stadium, 2-0 over MacArthur. Jake Holman and Valère Germain, the two goal scorers in each half. But gentlemen, Andrew Redmayne, red card, that's where we're going to start. To each of you, your verdict on that red card, both as you saw it live and then in the wash-up of the final decision. 15th minute, of course, changed the complexion of this game. Nick, what did you think when you saw it as you were covering it on your aleagues.com.au beat on the weekend?
Letter of the law, it's a red card. I just can never understand the intricacies now of what a natural shape is. What's the natural shape of your body? Like when those sort of stuff happens, I mean, like it's such a tough one. Like, as I said, letter of the law, it's a red card, but if you had to ask me, putting it bluntly, I'm not a big fan of it. Like, I think it was a bit unlucky, but I do see why he was sent off at the end of the day. Like, if we're going to go by what these new interpretations are, it feels like it's always changing. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, when you look at it and you look at sort of how these new interpretations are, it's a red card.
Yeah, a bit like Nick, it's, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's, I guess, when a keeper comes that far off his line, nosebleed territory. I mean, I just watched the Rene Higuita documentary the other day. It shades of Rene Higuita, the Colombian great, the madman goalkeeper. You don't often see Redmayne venture that far forward. And I guess when you do go that far forward, I mean, as a goalkeeper, you're kind of stuffed in a situation like that. But yeah, in saying that, if he got a yellow card, I would have, you know, I would have been pretty comfortable with that. But, you know, it was what it was. Sydney FC kind of got on with it. You know, Redmayne went off and Pavlicic came on and, you know, he was under the cosh from the, you know, from the outset. But, yeah, at the moment, I mean, McCarthy, you just can't afford to give them any opportunities, can you? Because they are absolutely flying. I mean, Sydney FC, it was a tough one for them. A lot of improvements under Ulfuk Tele, and they'll continue to improve. But yeah, against a MacArthur team that's flying top of the table at the moment, I mean, give them an opportunity like that, and they'll take it.
For what it's worth, originally I was outraged by the decision. Thought, you know, it hit him. You know, the body was that unnatural position, and it had just been on the right side of where the sleeve is meant to be. If you're looking at what is your arm and what's your body, and then there's one incriminating screenshot. It's on keepup.com.au, atleagues.com.au, if you want to go have a look at it, where his body, his arm is almost looking like he took a reflex action and did react to the shot coming in. I think Alex Bross referenced that on the Paramount coverage. And when you look at that screenshot, that's the smoking gun. But I agree, Dave, if I hadn't seen that and I'd seen a yellow card, I probably would have said, that's fine, play on. You know, question, obviously, Andrew Redmayne was kicking himself for the fact that he did come out flying like that. But it's honestly, I just get dizzy when we start talking about the handball rule at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And as a budding goalkeeper yourself, Dave, you'd appreciate
retired
it.
Goalkeeper.
But retired goalkeeper, of course. But
what about PTSD, no, that run out of the box, I can tell you that much.
But yeah, it's I think therein lies the point. You know, there was a particular screenshot, you know, when you pause it. I mean, this goes to the, you know, the challenges, the issues with VAR, and the
spot
fact
on.
That, you know, you can look at 10, 15, 20 different angles and you'll find the incriminating evidence. But, you know, up until, what, a couple of years ago, we got used to just the game going in the natural flow. And, yeah, referees obviously did make mistakes, but you just kind of, yeah, you got on with it. So that's been, I guess, the good and the bad of VAR, the re-refereeing of games and, you know, the hyper-analysis, if you like. But, yeah, look, in the end, I don't think there were too many complaints from Andrew Redmayne. And, yeah, he'll serve his suspension and life will go on.
So Ulfuk Tele, I did mention he thought his side did quite well. They certainly did give it a red-hot crack. But what was really impressive with MacArthur was how they held their composure, didn't panic, because sometimes you can do that when you actually got the man advantage, and then were clinically ruthless when you think about that Sydney FC did have some really good chances. To round out our discussion on MacArthur, Nick, they look professional. There's a little bit of class to them as well. Germain and Holman, the goal scorers, but you throw in Davila as well. There's quality. There's a lot of quality Mile Sojovski has to play with. And anyone that thinks they're going to, you know, that this is a seven-game, you know, aberration, I think they're in for it. I think MacArthur are going to be very hard to beat throughout the course of this season.
Yeah, I think it's quite incredible, because I think that there's probably this underlying thought of, oh, it's going to have to end eventually. But, you know, like, oh, this is just a bit of an aberration. But with every passing week, it's like, oh, they still keep going. It actually kind of reminds me a bit of what Western United did a couple of years ago, how they started the season with all those 1-0 wins and you're just waiting for the inevitable dip. You're like, it's coming. They can't do this forever. We all know what happened next. Now, I'm not going to say here after round seven and say MacArthur are going to win the championship this year. But, you know, we have to give them credit for the way they still keep finding a way to eke out results, because in such a tight league, those draws that they got earlier in the year, which you could probably make a fair case to say they probably should have gotten more wins, because they did cough up a lot of late goals in some of those games as well. When you look at the victory game, the Melbourne City game in particular, there's an argument to make that they probably should have at least an extra 4 points to their name. So it's been quite an incredible run for them. You know, as you said, Dave, you've got a lot of quality in that final third, Jermaine, De Villa, all those sort of players that can turn a game on a dime. I mean, Jay Coleman. But, you know, another good test for them coming up this weekend against Wellington Phoenix at home, coming back from playing in the Philippines as well. So far, they've been able to navigate the travel well, assuming they do go through, which they probably should, to the next round of the AFC Cup. We'll see if the squad depth can hold up later in the year when it gets to February and it gets that later part of the season. Miloš Stojovski seems confident they can keep it going. He thinks they've still got more in the tank. So I'm fascinated to see how this MacArthur train rolls on, because so far, so good.
Let's move on to Wellington, their next opponent, because they got a big surprise at home. It was a week where they just celebrated across both their men's and women's teams a clean sweep of the Player and Coach of the Month awards. Things were flying over at Wellington, and then Newcastle have come to town. They've put three past them.
The Jets have taken off in Wellington. They are 3-0 ahead, and surely now must believe the 3 points are theirs for the taking.
Apostolos Stamatolopoulos continuing his outstanding season with a brace. Clayton Taylor, a player we've spoken about often on this podcast, Dave, who looks an absolute gem. This is a huge result for Robbie Stanton.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about a clean sweep of the awards, it was Manchester United-esque. I think they did a similar thing, didn't they, with scooping the awards, Paul, and then copping three of the best over the weekend. But it was interesting. It was you know, among my notes last week, and, you know, didn't get around to it. I'm going to sound like a, you know, genius in hindsight, but I was really keen to see, you know, Wellington have gone so well. They've picked up a lot of points, results, you know, in a lot of games they've been underdogs. And I thought this will be really interesting to see how they go coming into this game as favourites, because they were clear favourites, you know, perhaps for the first time, or the clearest favourites they've been all season. And, yeah, it's a completely different approach to the game, I guess, psychologically. And yeah, in the end, losing 3-0, I didn't see it coming. I was obviously intrigued to see how it would play out. But the Newcastle Jets have just been, they've been really solid this season, like quite inconsistent, but regardless of, you know, the scoreline or who they've come up against, they've been fighters, and I think Robbie Stanton has really, really instilled that. And, you know, we'll hear from Robbie in a moment, but he just really impresses me. Like, he's one of those, you know, he's a mature age rookie coach. He's been in the system for a long, long time. He's worked with some fantastic coaches along the journey. We got to watch him at really close quarters in the A-League All-Stars, you know, game a year and a half ago, where he was assistant to Dwight York. But, you know, essentially he was the head coach. He was really running the show and calling the shots. And I've just been really impressed with the way he's gone about it. He's thrown some of the youngsters, you know, in the deep end, and, you know, got a fantastic balance in this team. And obviously in Stamatolopoulos, he's found a guy who, you know, he's confident scoring goals. And, you know, when you've got someone like that up front, you're always in with a chance.
He's spoken about the point in his career where he is for Stamatolopoulos, that he's come to Newcastle at the right time. He's married, he's settled, he's built on experiences both here at a couple of A-League clubs and abroad, and he's come back and he's doing a great job. And I mean, you even mentioned him in your discussion earlier, Dave, about, you know, potential Socceroos depth down the line. He's all of a sudden, you score these goals, you put yourself in that kind of conversation. You mentioned Robbie Stanton. Let's hear what he had to say.
Oh, look, we've been called bland. We've been called, we're going to come last. I think Chief's been called, he's going to come second last or last. So, you know, in the end, I don't mind, mate. It's my job. It's his job to prove people wrong. I'm okay with that. I went from being comfortable at Sydney in a role, that very good role with great people, great club, to putting myself in an uncomfortable position to be better. As I said, there's bigger and better teams out there than us. It's my job to try and improve us and change the thinking of others.
And he's doing that, Nick. And I think, just to also allude to something Dave mentioned earlier about balance, for every Taylor, there's a Brandon O'Neill, there's a Grozos, there's a, you know, Piscopo has been around for a while now. So he does have a little bit of balance to the kids he's throwing in, with some decent pros, or some pros who really want to, you know, establish themselves in the Hunter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the return of Piscopo is a big one. You know, he missed, I think, the first five games of the year. You know, someone who has shown at Wellington and in little bits at Newcastle, not too much last year under Arthur Pappas. He had a nice little patch before he got injured towards the tail end of the season. But someone who can certainly create something out of nothing, you know, is a really positive player to put in alongside your Taylors and your Stamatolopouloses. So I think they've got something there. Look, it's a big result. Going over to Wellington's never easy, and coming away with a 3-0 win, mind you, is also just as impressive. So, you know what? After a few sort of tough results, the loss against the Mariners, the loss against Melbourne City, where, you know, they were outplayed in both those games, it's a massive result for them. And you know what? It's a good opportunity for them to build off this as well. Perth Glory at home coming up is a game that I think they'd see as winnable. I know Perth have had immense struggles away from WA this year. So they'd go in quite confident. They got a 2-2 draw against them earlier in the year. So something certainly for them to build off. You know, whether they can put together a sustained finals push with this current squad, it'll be tough. But they've got some players they're certainly unearthing and some players that can certainly, you know, sort of take them to that next level. So we'll see how they go over this little bit, but certainly a step in the right direction getting a result like that on the weekend.
Yeah, they've been competitive, even when things were a little bit harder early on the season. Just a quick one, Dave, to conclude, do you think they can sustain it? Do you think they can? It's been so long, you know, between drinks for them. Can they sustain it? And does it even matter? You know, is progress even just a really positive thing this season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a challenge, you know, down on the Hunter, and I think the locals just want to see a team that's fighting, that's competitive. So, I mean, jeepers, if this team plays finals this year, that is a massive, massive feather in their cap, in Robbie Stanton's cap, and he'd have to be up there for, you know, as a coach of the year contender, you would think. You know, it's an okay squad on paper. It's not amazing. I'd imagine they'd have one of the smaller budgets in the competition. He's thrown a lot of youngsters in there. So I'd be surprised if they did play finals, but I do still think that they will, you know, continue to knock off some, you know, some bigger scalps and be competitive.
The official decision is a penalty kick for Melbourne City. Tonga Aslan dispatches the penalty and Melbourne City take the lead in Perth.
Friday night doubleheader, Perth 1, Melbourne City 2. Tolga Aslan and Matt Leckie with goals either side of the half, with Adam Taggart scoring for Perth Glory. That does not do justice, gents, to the tale of the tape of that first half, which included a red card for Callum Talbot that was overturned by VAR, a Leckie handball, a Khalifi penalty miss, Aslan getting a penalty through VAR, and then a goal in stoppage time to Adam Taggart through an absolute gift. Oh, I haven't done even justice to the tail of the tape or the frenetic nature of this game, Nick, which you were trying to summarise for alies.com.au on Friday night. Maybe you'll do it a bit more justice than me. How did you go trying to summarise that, and then what did you make of the result?
Well, first of all, give credit to Matt Comito for actually being the man on the ground for that game there, Dave. So I don't want to steal his thunder with that one. But no, honestly, like, keeping an eye on this one throughout the first half, sort of while keeping an eye on what was happening with the Mariners, Western United sort of wash up, it was frenetic. I mean, you know, Callum Talbot, Alan Stajic saw that should have been a red card. You know, he was quite firm in his post-game press conference. He felt he should have been sent off. Again, denying last man, Khalifi was bearing down. It's a 50-50, but I think, again, if it was just initially handed out as a yellow card, I personally wouldn't have had any complaints. I think it was a fair decision in the end. They get the penalty, Khalifi misses, but look, you know what? It was frenetic. City got that goal in the end. You know, it was a bad mistake to lead to that equaliser for Taggart from Alessandro Lapane, but they did well to bounce back and get something from that game, because, you know, Perth really pushed them in that second half late in the game. Taggart probably should have had another goal, forced a good save from Jamie Young. So, you know what, for Melbourne City, they won't be complaining, because it's been such a tough stretch for them as well. A lot of travel, a five-day turnaround from going and playing in Newcastle to then going to play in Perth, to then, at the time of recording, tomorrow to playing against Zhejiang at Icon Park in Carlton, you know, in the ACL. It's game after game for them at the moment. It's a tough slate. Aurelio Vidmar said after the game that it's almost about just sort of being in maintenance mode at the moment. You know, we can't really train often. We just got to be able to get a team ready for the next game and just, you know, get ready to go again, because then they've got the Mariners at home after that, a derby. It doesn't get much easier for them. So, you know, going over to WA and getting a win at a place that isn't always an easy place to go and get results at HBF Park, I think would be certainly a big boost for them.
A boost for them, Dave, and a boost, Matt Leckie, first goal, first start. Timing for Melbourne City, timing for the Socceroos, the discussion we had before, an assist from Aziz Bajic, no less. They're all good signs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that could have been rewind, what, 53, 54 weeks, and that could have been them over in Qatar, you know, against France or Denmark or Tunisia or whatever it was. And I'm sure a lot of the Glory fans that were jeering them would have been cheering them back then. But look, Leckie is in many ways the difference. Sometimes when you're down and out, you're struggling for confidence, you just need that spark. And Leckie coming back into this side, you know, he's a quietly spoken person, but you know, lets his actions do the talking. And you know, the way he got up and leapt, you know, for that goal to put away Aziz Bajic's, you know, perfectly timed cross was outstanding and very much epitomised Matthew Leckie. So that's huge for them. Big win. You know, they're on 10 points now, just outside the top six on goal difference behind Adelaide United. But you know, I think they'll get some momentum now. January will be an interesting one because you do expect them to lose two or three, you know, to the Asian Cup. So I think they'll probably be more affected than most. In saying that, they do have more depth than most. So there'll be a heavy reliance on some of those, you know, fringe players and younger players. But yeah, Leckie back is huge.
And praise from Aurelio Vidmar, just talking about the amount of work he's done to get back this quickly and in both for club and country. A massive in there. Perth, interesting for them. They've come back. This was one they wanted to make a dent in, wasn't it? And that's going to hurt them a little bit.
Yeah, Will. They were good. They had, you know, chances. It was a frenetic game. I mean, the crowd was getting into it as well. It was a fantastic atmosphere there on Friday night at HBF Park. But, you know, the problem is, and a bit like Western United, although, you know, I think Glory's performances have been better than Western, or certainly over the weekend. I mean, you know, 4 points, second last, they're 6 points off the top six. They've just got to be careful. They don't fall too far away. I still think they've got a good squad. I think Adam Taggart, he looks as, you know, I think Rudin, yeah, spoke about Fornaroli being as motivated as ever. I see the same in Adam Taggart. You know, he missed, I think, a game through injury. But aside from that, he's been up and about. He's been scoring. He's been dangerous. Even the way he read that, you know, that back pass from Lapane, you know, he preempted that and, you know, rounded the keeper beautifully. It was a great finish. So Taggart's really one to watch this season. And again, if you've got a striker that's scoring, we mentioned Stamatolopoulos, etc. If Taggart's scoring for Perth Glory, they're going to be there or thereabouts and challenging for the top six.
Yeah, motivated, a great word for Adam Taggart. He was stingy that he didn't get one of those two late chances past Jamie Young at the death there.
Marco Tullio! Beautiful goal. And the Mariners almost home for the 3 points before halftime.
Well, back to the beginning. Central Coast 4, Western United 0. A great story for Central Coast. A terrible story for Western United. Goal from Dan Hall, Brian Kaltak, Marco Tullio, Alu Kwol. But that Marco Tullio goal was an absolute peach. Gorgeous stuff and an even more gorgeous celebration with his family in the stands. Where do you want to take this one, Nick? Do you want to talk about the revival of Central Coast, the champions under Mark Jackson, or do you want to talk about the issues and the real issues that are surfacing at West United with goals just not coming?
Let's, I think, start with the positive with the Mariners. I think they need a little bit of love. It's been a bit of a tough start to the season for them. And look, it's been a good bounce back since the international break. They went into that 4 losses in a row to start the season. But since then, 7 points out of a possible 9, in a good position to progress in the next round of the AFC Cup. But that was their best performance of the season. You know, they look a lot more steady in defence now that Dan Hall and Brian Kaltak have forged a really nice partnership back there. Both scored. You know, Marco Tullio was, I thought, unplayable the other night. Him and Angel Torres forged a really nice combination. But also the two youngsters that were handed their first starts or A-League starts in Jing Rees and Miguel DiPizio, two players to certainly keep an eye on this year. I know they do need to continue to rotate that squad with the heavy schedule. So we saw Alu Kwol and Thea Harris, you know, sort of coming on in around that sort of hour mark, and Kwol scoring again. You know, he's actually quietly putting together a decent season, a nice little run now. up to 3 goals in the league and 3 in 4. So a nice little patch there for him. But no, a really good performance for the Mariners. Strong defensively, didn't really give Western much of a chance. I mean, Western didn't really look like creating anything, but every time the Mariners went forward, they looked like scoring. And they probably could have easily had another 2 or 3. And one of the players who was really key to sort of kickstarting all of those attacks was Josh Nisbet. I thought he was sensational. Yeah. There was a play in that first half where he kind of received the ball in the middle and he sort of mazed his way around a few players. He ended up falling to Miguel DiPizio, forced a really good save from Heward Bell. But yeah, Josh Nisbet, sensational again, one of the real unsung heroes of this competition. But a good night for Mark Jackson, a good night for the Mariners, and a little bit of pressure eased off Jackson, which is certainly a big thing for the reigning champions.
Great feature on aleagues.com.au by James Dodd. If you want to get to know a little bit more about Mark Jackson, who we don't know particularly a hell of a lot about for the fans out there, so there's that to have a look at. Well, really glad you mentioned DiPizio. Really looking forward to seeing a bit more of him in the league too. But Dave, and one other thing I want to call out is Danny Vukovic breaking the record for most clean sheets in A-League history as well, going past Liam Reddy, two of the absolute icons of the game there. I'll ask the same question to you, Dave. More on the Mariners. And were the Mariners that good, or were Western United that poor? Three goals from set pieces as well. So Luisi called it the worst game of his tenure in charge of Western United. And I guess there'll be interesting dinner table conversations, or metaphorical dinner table conversations, I should say, ahead of his date with Ross this weekend.
Yeah, always hard to judge. Maybe a bit of both, if we're going to be honest. But, you mentioned Vukovic, you mentioned Nisbet, Keltac, they've just got such a good spine, some really good leaders in that team that, even when they were struggling at the start of the season, they've got the right people in the dressing room to kind of, keep it together, where at other clubs it might, capitulate, fall apart. But I agree, Nisbet, I thought, was absolutely outstanding. He's a really interesting player. I mean, I think a couple of years ago, a lot of people wouldn't have picked him to, kick on as much as he has. But he's just been sensational for a long, long time, and I think underrated for a long, long time. But now perhaps with a few other players leaving, he's really, stepping up and showing his quality. Western United, that was really poor. And again, when you're copping goals, from set pieces like that, there are a couple of, powerhouses in Hall and Keltac, rising high to score from those set pieces, but a lot of concerns around Western United. Pretty much every week we talk about the fact that they can't fall too far away. Well, they're really threatening to now. So, for John Aloisi, maybe it's time to make a few changes, freshen the first 11 up a little bit. But, some real concerns at in Western. But in saying that, Central Coast would be absolutely buzzing. And Alu Kuol agreed, third goal of the season. I'm really looking forward to seeing him in that sort of February to May period, because I think once he gets a bit of momentum, he's got the potential to hit double digits this season.
Nick, on Western, up until probably this week, it's been a case of, geez, where's that goal? Why isn't that goal coming? Because they're doing some decent stuff. Do you throw the baby out of the bathwater after the performance like that and change things up, whether it be formation, whether it be personnel? Or do you think, okay, that was an aberration, that was just a really poor night?
I think it's a bit of both. I think there's a couple of different things. I thought that in comparison to the other games, their heads just dropped immediately. There wasn't a response. In some of the other games, look, they've fallen behind, but they've still been able to create a lot of opportunity, especially in that slate of games they had in Ballarat. They just could not score. I think they do need to change a few the one thing I think they definitely need to do is move Daniel Peña centrally. I think that's been something that's been quite a fascinating move from John Aloisi, to play him out wide, considering what we saw him do with the Jets playing as a 10. He led the league in assists playing in behind Becca Mikultadze, and I think him, sort of playing those final balls to Noah Botic, or if it's Nikita Rukavica, I think that's really important. I think they need to give some other players an opportunity as well, Dave. You mentioned, potentially, making a few personnel changes. A few statements at selection, I think, might be needed. They've got a youngster on the bench by the name Matthew Grimaldi, who I watched very closely this year playing in the NPL for Western United's academy team. He's now made a few substitute appearances. I think it's time to give him an opportunity. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen by giving some of these youngsters a chance? Their academy team last year was one of the best academy teams I've seen play in Victoria. They were so close to getting promoted out of Victoria's second tier. I think it's time to give some of them a go. You know, we saw some of them play in the Australia Cup, like Ollie Lavelle as well. They have Reece Bosanovsky, who we haven't seen this season. Kane Vidmar, who didn't play in the academy team, but someone who got a few opportunities. I think maybe giving him a sustained chance, that starting lineup might not be the worst thing. I think they've got to make a few statements, change up maybe just a little bit. And whether that does enact a change, they've got to try something, right? Like, you know, plan A hasn't worked. Got to try moving to plan B and maybe making a few statements might be the best thing for them going forward.
Yep. Interesting to see what John Aloisi does ahead of his big game against Brisbane Roar next week. And, gents, that's where the round does start. Friday night, West United against Brisbane at Amy Park, 6 p.m. A-League's all-access cameras will be following that around for the Aloisi derby, because former side, it is an extraordinary Australian football story to have John and Ross taking each other on in an A-League's match this weekend. And we look forward to speaking to both of them and getting to know what it means to the family to have this showdown on Friday night. As well on Friday night, Western Sydney take on Adelaide. So the first game is at 6 p.m. Eastern, second game 7:45 p.m. Eastern. Then Saturday, doubleheader, Newcastle against Perth, 6 p.m. Melbourne Victory, Sydney FC, the Big Blue, Amy Park, 7:45 p.m. It's actually a triple header of games at Amy Park this weekend, because Melbourne City take on Central Coast on Sunday afternoon. Monday night is MacArthur against Wellington at 7 p.m. So this show, the official Isuzu A-League podcast, will come to you on Tuesday next week. Of course, tune in for the fantasy show for a look ahead to those games. That's on Wednesday. Another week of stacked content across A-Leagues.com.au and the Keep Up Digital Network. Gents, run out of time. Great to speak to you as always. Great to have you on the show, Nick, to get your insights and your passionate thoughts this week. Have a great week ahead, gents. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Well done, guys. And to those who made it this far in the podcast, congratulations. And as ever, until the next episode of the podcast, enjoy your football.